Thank you. Be seated. The court is ready to hear oral argument from Relators in American Home versus Ramirez and Tanner.
May it please the court, Mr. Andrew Payne will present argument for the Relators. The Relators have reserved 55 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. My name is Andy Hayden, and together with David Douglas, I represent American Home Products and Wyatt Air in this mandamus action. This mandamus stems out of four different lawsuits filed in four different counties in South Texas, which basically allege medical malpractice and products liability claims against the distributor of the contraceptive Norplant and the physicians who prescribe it. The question in front of this court today is simple, but it's very important. Integrity of the judicial process. The question is, can a party opponent come in the middle of a lawsuit and hire away his opponent's consultants and then turn around and use them against that first party who originally hired him in the exact same litigation?
Now, are you talking about the doctor or the other?
I'm talking about both,
Your Honor. They were both hired as consultants?
Yes, they were.
With regard to the integrity of the judicial system, and correct me to the extent I may be wrong with the facts here, but there appears to be a situation where the defense team swept into the area and hired up almost every doctor who was available, even available for the plaintiffs to go see for their treating physicians. If that's the case, how does that promote the integrity of the judicial system?
First of all, Your Honor, that's not the case.
Okay.
The record doesn't support that. What the record shows is that what happened was the plaintiffs filed one plaintiff, filed a count. And then after they got the court they won, they intervened over 600 other people from all over, quite frankly, all over the nation. And so it was important that we have local physicians there to be able to do IMDs, to be able to defend.
On how many plaintiffs at that time when you hired all those doctors?
There were over 600 plaintiffs in that county alone. There were also...
How many doctors did you hire in that county?
I want to say five or six.
How many doctors practiced?
Well, the testimony, I'm not sure the testimony is such that there's at least eight, but there may be more. That the testimony was, I don't know.
But you say you needed doctors in that county to treat these 600 people who live all over the nation, but was the defense being conducted out of that county? In other words, with the defense attorneys in that county, were there?
I'm not understanding the court's question.
You wanted doctors in this county.
Absolutely.
To test a nationwide set of plaintiffs, and I'm wondering why the doctors couldn't be in New York City or Houston or something.
Well, as the court knows, it's important when the jury is a Zavala County jury, you want a Zavala County doctor to be able to get up there and testify. These plaintiffs, I mean, the question should really be asked the other side. Why did you bring all these plaintiffs from all these other places, stick them in Zavala County?
How many plaintiffs live in Zavala County?
I think out of the total, Your Honor, less than 20 of all these.
And
out
so,
of the trial plaintiffs, I'm sorry.
So of those less than 20, since you hired five of the eight doctors in town, they were confined to going to three of the remaining eight in order to get their medical care, even if the doctor they had been going to all along was some other doctor.
Doc, let me correct misapprehension there, maybe. Eight is all the record shows. The testimony is he couldn't remember them all, but eight is all he can remember. I mean, there's not just testimony that there's just seven or eight doctors. Okay. I was trying to stick to what the record shows. Now, the question is why would we need that many?
First of all, why would you need that many? But secondly, looking at the broader concept of how you started out, and that is the impact that this has on the appearance of our judicial system, what impact does that create when you have 19 people who are confined to going to three doctors, whereas they may otherwise want to be able to choose doctors in town, but they can't go to one of those doctors because they've already been hired by the other lawyers?
Well, but they're not confined to go to any sort of doctor.
But they can't go to the doctor hired by the other lawyers.
But they not only can, they did go.
Well, and
they treated the doctor.
Then we had this dispute because of
it. No, if I can correct the court here just for a second, The doctor, Gonzalez, let's take him, because he's the only one the record is really developed on. We attempted to depose the other doctors, and those depositions were quashed. The record shows that Dr. Gonzalez, since the dispute, offered treatment to whomever came in his office. Some of them included one of the plaintiffs, unbeknownst to us. Now, that doesn't prohibit the plaintiff from contacting him as a fact witness or an expert witness with regard to his treatment.
But what about the lawyer talking to him?
The lawyer can talk to him as far as his treatment of the plaintiff.
So he's an expert witness for you and one as to one plaintiff and a treating expert witness for another plaintiff in the same case?
He could be. But that's not the facts in this case. What happened was they were hired away to be an expert in a completely different county having nothing to do with these plaintiffs.
Let me get this. You say there's 600 plaintiffs. Were they all scheduled to be tried in the same case, or were there going to be groups of plaintiffs tried, or do we know?
Both, Your Honor. They were going to be tried in the same case, but there were going to be groups of plaintiffs. And out of the first, the original schedule was the first three that were going to try three. And out of those first three, none were from Zavala County. In fact, two of the three hadn't even heard of Zavala County, didn't even know where it was when we proposed it. Now,
I don't understand. Dr. Gonzalez was hired by the defense, and what was his purpose? Was he hired as an expert witness, consulting expert?
He was hired as the consulting expert originally, Your Honor. Let me back up and give you the time frame. Up to today, even, there has not been one plaintiff who has identified him in their interrogatories as a treating physician. So the argument they're making is, you screwed up, you relied on what we told you in interrogatories.
What was the agreement between Dr. Gonzalez and Wyatt?
The agreement was he was initially going to be a consulting witness with the prospect that he was going to become a testifying expert should we have a plaintiff that he would do an IME on, or a testifying expert with regard to the generic area of birth control. So it was more than likely going to be our intent that he would testify, but we never got that chance. This is not an accessing situation. This is not a situation where we're trying to hide a fact witness by saying he's a consultant only. That's not the situation. In fact, we've never complained about, never prohibited, never tried to prohibit anyone from talking to these witnesses about any of the facts in this case. And I think that's important.
I'd like to get on to the investigator in a minute, but maybe I don't understand. I thought you were trying to disqualify the other firm for their contacts with some of these doctors.
Yes, Your Honor, but look at the contacts.
That consistent with your statement? It's fine for the lawyers to talk to these doctors, and it's fine to have conversations with them, and it's fine to inquire of them, and it's fine to have them be treatment consultants. But, oh, by the way, because they did contact this doctor, just follow me. Maybe I misunderstood.
No, that's where you're going. The undisputed evidence is, and this is what I think they're trying to raise in a brief, it's not accurate. Look at the evidence. The undisputed evidence is they didn't go in and try to talk to this doctor about his treatment of Mrs. X or Mrs. Y. What they did is they went in and paid him $10,000 to switch sides, gave him our documents, and had him review those so he could testify against us as their expert.
Here's what I'm focused on. The disqualification issue goes to, we reveal confidential information to our consulting only experts. They went in and co-opted that consulting expert for them, so disqualify the firm because I assume there's a presumption that there's a divulging of confidential information. What you're telling us in argument is, with respect to the doctors, the lawyer can go ask the doctor anything he wants to.
So how can you rely on
the presumption issue that there's a divulging of confidential information if you can see that they are entitled to talk to them about the case?
Well, first of all, they can talk to them about the plaintiff they treat. They can talk to them about, yes, I treated Mrs. X for a cold, and this is what her treatment was, and this is my opinion about the treatment. That's, I think, permissible. I don't think we've ever tried to stop that. Secondly, I think the court thinks you need a presumption in this case. You're mistaken, because we have undisputed proof in this record that confidences were divulged. This court has written on at least two different occasions that the identity of consultants is confidential, privileged information, and the record is undisputed that this doctor got with Mr. Herrera. Mr. Herrera asked him, well, who are their other consultants? And he told them, and then he went and met with them.
But if you're not relying on the presumptions, then doesn't this become a factual dispute in front of the trial court in an abuse of discretion test? I mean, don't we now come down to it's disputed about, well, the investigator's example, it's disputed about what information got divulged, or the doctor's disputed about what information got divulged or didn't get divulged, and now aren't we faced with, just point blank, the judge's abuse of discretion on reviewing the evidence?
Judge, I'm not suggesting that you don't rely on presumptions, because I think that's the only safe way that this court should rule. Look at the facts, and rely on the presumptions, disqualified. What I'm saying is, though, if you feel uncomfortable doing that, or some of the cases that the other side has cited, you don't have to rely on the presumptions, because we have undisputed proof. It's not a fact issue. It's not arguing, well, he didn't tell me, he did tell you. Undisputed proof from Dr. Gonzalez's old mouth is, I told Mr. Herrera about who these other doctors were. And then Dr. Gonzalez and Ms. Palacios, the investigator, got together and set up a meeting and had Mr. Herrera meet me. So that's a clear disclosure of confidential information. So I don't think you reached that. The fact of the matter is the court never has to even get to Dr. Gonzalez because of the taking away of the paralegal that worked for us or the investigator. I don't think it matters what label you call it. The State Bar of Texas has a label it called the paraprofessional in the ethics rules. And that's what we used in our brief when we briefed it to this court. But it clearly states there that if you take somebody, and this court has clearly stated, Phoenix Founders has clearly stated in the Grant case, if you hire someone and bring them into your law firm, and they've worked on the exact case that you have, and you don't screen them away from that law firm, you don't have a Chinese wall or a screening procedure, disqualification will be required.
Now, did she ever work for the defense law?
Well, there is a fact issue on whether she was an employee of a defense law firm. There is no fact issue about whether she worked for Wyatt, my client. Her undisputed testimony is she was hired by Mr. Frank Rivas, in-house counsel for Wyatt as a consultant, and hired by Leslie Benitez, Clark Thomas, and Winters here in Austin.
As a consultant?
Well, as a more or less a contract employee. That's her testimony. There's no dispute as to that.
What is your testimony has to be what her duties?
Well, her duties, I think she testified. She arranged for us to contact and meet consultants. She helped set up consultants. She investigated the plaintiffs. She wrote a confidential memorandum. The court will look at exhibits 56 through about 64 in the record. You'll see that she wrote us a memorandum where she did investigations stamped with confidential and with the first opening line of many of these. I found this information out from confidential sources. And she sent it to us. And now they have access.
That was not the confidence did not come from party.
Oh, we didn't tell her, but see, that's their argument. But that ignores the whole relationship of why you hire a consultant. I mean, you don't hire a consultant for you to help them. You hire a consultant for them to help you.
And she was paid for the services or not?
She was not paid. She billed our local counsel, who subsequently quit. And apparently, I think the record is clear that he didn't pay her bill. But I don't think whether you're paid or not, you know, physically paid, she certainly did it with expectation of payment. And I don't think that makes a difference. I mean, if you have to be paid, then any lawyer that's on a contingent fee that loses doesn't have any ethical obligations. I mean, because he would not have gotten paid. So whether you're paid or not, I don't think makes any difference in this equation. Now, the interesting thing about all this is they don't deny this. They don't deny the conduct. They don't deny that they went in and grabbed this paralegal and that she then set up meetings with our consultants. Their argument is, basically, one, that we waived it.
Finish your sentence.
One, that we waived it, or two, that we didn't have a right to talk to these positions anyway. But they make no argument as to the paralegal. They make no waiver argument as to the paralegal.
Any other questions? Thank you. The court is ready to hear argument from respondents.
May I please support Mr. Donald Hunt to present argument to the respondents?
May it please the court, in contrast to the position taken by the realtor defendants, this is a lawyer discipline case of first impression, since it involves third parties and not staff employees addressed by this court in Vinix, Founder, and Grant. This court is today asked to expand the basis of disqualification because, first, the defendants designated a treating physician as a fact witness, treating physician fact witness as a consulting expert, and second, a freelance promoter sought employment with the defense, and third, the so-called consulting expert and the freelancer were hired by the plaintiffs after defense counsel assured the plaintiffs that neither had any confidential relationship or confidential information. Faced with hotly disputed facts, heard over 5 days by Judge Tanner in Bexar County, the district court rejected the disqualification, and so should this court, as a look at the two third persons should indicate. And in looking at these third persons, it should be kept in mind that this is not a plaintiff's or a defendant's issue. The decision this court makes today cuts both ways. So consider each of these third parties. First is Dr. Salvador Gonzalez, a treating physician. As a treating physician, he could not be a consulting expert as a matter of law. As this court said in 1990, in Axelson against Michael Haney, a fact witness can never be a consulting-only expert. And yet, that's what the defense hopes to do here, is somehow shield the medical witnesses in Zabala County by placing on each of them the hat of consulting expert. But Dr. Gonzalez, in this
record... Let me ask you about that real quick. There are 600 plaintiffs, and they're tried over a period of 5 or 6 years in groups of cases. Could Dr. Gonzalez be a fact witness in one and consulting expert in another case? What's wrong with that?
That is the claim that the defense makes, but Axelson really answers that. Because in Axelson, you were dealing with two employees. One who was designated as a consulting only, who had fact information. And this court said there that to witness could not be so shielded, and the witness must be able to give the facts.
No, I
understand your question, but in that case, this court was dealing with whether there was a difference between what the witness knew as one who was there at the time of the blowout and what information one gained later. And the answer has to be that you can't go in with a scalpel and divide the mind of the witness. Always, the witness must be able to testify to the facts that witness knows. And that's the answer. So long as Dr. Gonzalez knows facts or gains knowledge of facts about these plaintiffs, then he ought to be able to testify, and he ought to be protected in the sense that he's free to give expert testimony.
How do you respond to the argument of Mr. Hayman that Dr. Gonzalez disclose confidential information?
Your Honor, that was a hotly disputed fact issue. Here is how it came down. Jesse Gomez, the local attorney, arranged for the meetings with the doctor along with Deanna Palacios. Each of those testified along with Dr. Gonzalez. that no confidential information was ever disclosed to them. Instead, the representation was made to them beforehand. And all we want is your information, your opinion on how the Norplant product is working. Come to a luncheon and we'll pay for your time. So the representation was made to Dr. Bezos and each of the other treating physicians on which the consulting expert's hat is attempting to be placed. Come to luncheon, share your knowledge. This is not the purpose of making you a consultant of any kind. But contrary to that oral representation, contrary to the testimony of the three people involved, Jesse Gomez, Diane Palacios, Dr. Gonzalez, the defense claims that somehow confidential information was shared. They say no. They say that the representation was made that come to lunch, share what you know about the product, you're not to be a consultant. Despite that, and we'll pay you for your time, despite that, a letter was sent suggesting they were a consultant, and a check was sent. Now that's the fact issue that's created right there. That fact issue, Judge Tanner had to resolve, and she resolved it in a way with holding and implied findings that this doctor was not a consulting expert and had no confidential information.
So, Hunt, it occurs to me there are several levels we're dealing with here. When a lawyer works with one firm that's representing the client on one side, then leaves and goes to work with another firm that has the other side, we don't permit a Chinese wall. We don't permit some sort of demarcation or DMZ or anything in the
sure.
law firm. We just say the second law firm is disqualified from representing the client.
Right.
A staff member, a paralegal, moves from one firm to another, and the court seemed to be concerned that this is a different circumstance, and a Chinese wall might be permissible.
Right.
If this is just another level staffer, a Chinese wall might be permissible. And so you move them over there and you got a Chinese wall and maybe that's okay. It seems to me that in this case, there would not be a presumption of shared confidences that would result in the firm being disqualified merely from employing this third party. It seems to me, though, there is a problem, even acknowledging this in the paralegal or a staff of the firm, there is a potential problem. There is no Chinese wall record here. In fact, this person is hired over here to hire exactly to provide information and deal on the issues that they ostensibly were inquired of by the other side. Your position is that it seems to me the issue in this case is there going to be a presumption of shared competences here, or is this strictly going to be a resolution of the fact issue of if any competences were shared? In other words, that middle level, where with Chinese wall, we still operate under the presumption that there's been shared competences or through their work they obtained them. But this is even a lower level. Is there even a presumption? Or should the court have a presumption that there's been shared competences, or should this simply be a fact issue? Can Dr. Gonzalez, can Ms. Palacios testify we had no shared competences, and can a court, without abusing its discretion, rely on that testimony?
Your Honor, first, you make two points, and let's address whether there is a shared presumption. Now, in both the Phoenix Founders and Grant, there was an unquestioned relationship between a staff employee and the law firm. Staff employees, paralegals who have the run of the law office, who have keys to the file cabinet, who can get in and look at the files, indeed are given files and expected to assist the attorneys on that very case. Now, that's the reason why there is a shared presumption. There is and should be no shared presumption where there is a third party. Indeed, the projected, or what Judge Tanner was asked to do was apply the federal test in such cases as Cordy against Sherman Williams and Hall against Rawlings Sporting Goods. Under that federal test, what the court is looking for is a two-step process. First, an objective, reasonable belief that a confidential relationship exists. And second, does the party actually disclose confidential information? So at this lower level, applying the federal test, there first must be established this objective, reasonable belief that a confidential relationship existed. And using that, Your Honor, whether you call it some sort of presumption or say it's a fact issue, that cannot never be here. And the reason why is that Dr. Gonzalez was a treating physician. The references were made to interrogatories. But what was omitted is that the plaintiffs, some of the very patients who were suing, came to court and testified that Dr. Gonzalez was a treating physician about Norplant treatment.
What about Ms. Palacios?
Ms. Palacios can also be tested by this same analysis. Now, understand her relationship to this case. She unquestionably was a promoter. And what she was interested in doing was promoting herself. She was interested in getting hired. This record reflects that as a freelance, non-staff, she was attempting to be employed by the defense. She sought employment there. Indeed, she explained on the record that she thought she was employed and then came to discover that she wasn't.
Do you disagree with Mr. Hannon's characterization of the record that the evidence is undisputed that confidences were disclosed to her?
Oh, yes, Your Honor.
So that, is it your position that the record reflects that that's disputed or that there were no confidences?
Hotly disputed. Jesse?
If confidences were disclosed to her, then under the test that you proposed, would the law firm be disqualified?
No, Your Honor.
Why not?
This should be a one-step process. For example, you have two law firms here, Frank Herrera and the Cherry Davis firm. Now, just as this court has written in situations where you have lawyers who share offices, that there is no disqualification because there's no presumption here, there's not any necessary presumption that whatever Frank Herrera might have known is that Cherry Davis is disqualified. But neither should be disqualified because this record reflects that Jesse Gomez, the local counsel, Diana Palacios, and Dr. Gonzalez all testified that there were no confidences ever shared.
But assume with me that confidences were shared with Ms. Palacios. Then would the law firm be, would the lawyers be disqualified under your test that you're proposing for third party?
Your Honor, if there was the meeting of the first test, the first prong, an objective, reasonable belief that a confidential relationship existed, then you make the assumption, as you've asked me to do, that the party actually discloses confidences, then yes. But the defense can't pass the first prong here, and the reason why the defense can't pass the first prong is that the defense started out with the idea that she is somehow an employee of Jesse Gomez.
And if I understand you correctly, this is an objective test. It's not
That's
what
correct.
Ms. Palacio believed or did not believe, but an objective test, a reasonable person test.
That's correct. And as a reasonable person test, it's the same sort of fact analysis and submission of facts to a fact finder as there would be in an objective person test for negligence. But the point is that Diana Palacios is a person about whom the defense could have had no objective belief that she was a hired employee. The reason for that is
Do we look to both the lawyer and the third party in terms of this objective test? What both sides would have believed as to whether or not there's a confidential relationship?
No, Your Honor. You only look at the moving party, the party who is seeking to disqualify. That's clear on the federal test. It is the moving party that needs to have the objective, reasonable belief. But here, the plaintiffs argue that the defense could not have had that objective, reasonable belief. And here's why. At the beginning of the disqualification hearing, the defense was taking the argument. Indeed, that was the opening argument of the attorneys, that Deanna Palacios is a paralegal investigator of Jesse Gomez. And what was wrong with that is that both Jesse Gomez and Deanna Palacios got on the witness stand and explained that, no, she had never worked for Jesse Gomez, never had a W-2, never had a 1099. She was not his employee in any shape, form, or fashion. So then the emphasis...
Did she work for him? If anybody.
Why? Did she work for anybody? She worked for...
the moving party in this court.
Correct. Now, it must be at least said that Diana Palacios said in her testimony that she was trying to be employed by Wyatt. She thought she was. But as it turned out, the defendant never did anything to complete the employment. There was never any opportunity. The defense never asked her to sign a confidentiality statement. The defense never furnished her any files. The defense never shared any information with her, as the testimony from the parties who were there said. Now, that's a hotly disputed fact issue, because conceivably, the defense attorney would say that confidences were shared.
Let me ask you something before your time runs out. You said today in your brief state that defense counsel assured a plaintiff's counsel that Diana Palacios had not been hired by them.
Correct.
Who said that? You've got some slides to the record. I haven't looked it up yet, but who said that and to whom?
Jesse Gomez, Frank Pereira, before he ever did anything about employing Diana Palacios or talking to Dr. Gonzalez, called Jesse Gomez, the local counsel for defendant Wyatt American Home Products. Frank Pereira inquired of the person who appeared for all the world to be the defense counsel.
What was the timing of this? When did Jesse Gomez withdraw as counsel in relation to this conversation?
He withdrew in November. This conversation occurred in October 13th and 14th, a day or two before the employment of Deanna Palacios on October 15, 1996. This telephone conversation, the records show, occurred that day or a day or two before. But what must be kept in mind here, because the record could be confusing here. Jesse Gomez wrote a letter to the defendants and explained that he was withdrawing. It's admitted that was received on September the 29th, 1996. But he didn't withdraw until he submitted his motion of withdrawal at the end of October, which was granted on November the 4th. But the important thing to keep in mind is that Frank Herrera didn't know about that letter. Frank Herrera had to treat Jesse Gomez as the counsel for Wyatt and American Homes, as indeed he was. In fact, the defense took the position in the disqualification hearing that Jesse Gomez was still the attorney for Wyatt because his motion of withdrawal only withdrew for one of the defense parties. And that's critical when you look at Diana Palacios and the argument that somehow she was the employee of Jesse Gomez. After the defense originally started out with the argument that she was the employee and was faced with the evidence that no, she wasn't, then suddenly she was supposed to be the employee of Wyatt. And now in the latest brief filed last Friday by the defense, it's been switched again, that the explanation is given why Wyatt never paid her any money is because it was Jesse Gomez's duty to make that payment. So it's been shifted again here late in the ball game, and the argument is made that somehow that the bill should have been paid to Jesse Gomez, but because it had to be, she is his employee. But that simply doesn't fit the facts.
So did the Herrera law firm know that she had billed Wyatt or Gomez?
Not at that time, Your Honor.
Did they subsequently find that out?
Oh, I'm sure it did. In discovery, it came out. There was a time when all these facts became known, but it
Well, did they ask her, have you ever done any work for life?
Oh, yes.
And what did she say?
Assurances were given by Diana and both Dr. Gonzalez that while they had talked and they received no confidential information and that there was no relationship there. So that was a disputed issue of fact. And in the end, mandamus must be rejected. If mandamus results in disqualification today, then the gamesmanship attorneys of Texas are given a powerful new tool for disqualifying attorneys simply by designating the other side's fact witnesses as a consulting expert and then attempting to disqualify that attorney if the attorney breaches the code of silence by attempting to contact that witness. The district court's rejection should be upheld.
The fact witness you refer to is Dr. Gonzalez. You just made a stirring peroration there. Dr. Gonzalez is the fact witness you're referring to.
Yes, Your Honor. Dr. Gonzalez was a treating physician.
For how many plaintiffs before he was contacted by the defense?
The record reflects at least three. A suggestion was made that the interrogatories didn't show it, but at the disqualification hearing, it shows on pages 477, 507, and 533, Dr. Gonzalez was a treating physician of at least three of the Duvalla County plaintiffs.
A treating physician for the problems that were the subject of this lawsuit before contacted by the defense.
Yes.
Is that what the record shows?
Two of them said Dr. Gonzalez treated them for Northland problems. One said she saw Dr. Gonzalez for a pregnancy before she got the Northland problem.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
The district court's judgment should be upheld.
May it please the court, there are so many things I want to say, and I've just asked this court to really look at the record. With all due respect to counsel for the opposing side, 95% of what he just said was in the record. Isn't in the record. This is the kind of case, quite frankly, where I don't think factually you need the presumption for this case, but you ought to have the presumption for the state of Texas. Because what they're saying is, well, in order to disqualify somebody because of let's use their word, freelance paralegal that was hired, and they knew, worked on this very case, and they hired with full knowledge that she had worked on this very case, and then turned around and used on this very case. They said, well, show us what you disclosed to her. Show us what you disclosed to her. Show us your confidential information. Well, if you have to do that, I mean, it's just a tactic. And this court has rejected that in Coker. This court rejected it in Phoenix Founders. This court rejected it in Grant. You never have to disclose your confidential information. Disqualify someone.
Mr. Hannon, are you then saying that we should use the Phoenix Founders test in doing situations involving third parties who are not employees of law firms?
Absolutely. Your Honor.
And you would disagree with Mr. Hunt's position that this federal test he talks about should be adopted?
Absolutely. Let me point out about the federal test, if I may. First of all, he says it's the federal test. It's one Ohio court magistrate. So it's not adopted like it's the federal test. I mean, to give it that much is to really give it too much credit. Secondly, it applies not to disqualification of counsel, but to disqualification of the witness. And I invite the court to read this. The case should be applied in what he's given you no reason why Phoenix Founders shouldn't apply. And I suggest the court look at Rule 5.
I'm sorry, let me ask you a question. If you accept what Hunt says that Dr. Gonzalez is invited to a lunch by some lawyers because they have an interest in Northland and they want him to come to lunch and visit with him. And they have some conversations. Are you saying that should be sufficient? That should be sufficient for disqualifying a lawyer law firm that later has a conversation with that same doctor? Because of your common doctor first.
Well, that might be, depending on the content of the conversation, but that's not what happened here. That's why I urge you to look at it. Here is Dr. Gonzalez's bill. It lists over 20 hours of work. It lists all the meetings he had with defense counsel, all the consultations he had. He met with Wyatt's attorneys and the representatives 8 times. This is all undisputed. This is all undisputed. And that's why I really urge you to look at what the real facts are in this case. Secondly, he said, we tried to designate Dr. Gonzalez as a consulting only. Well, I mean, that's clearly an attempt to say we tried to get under Axelton or they're trying to get us under Axelton. We've never designated. Time for designating witnesses has not come up. The fact of the matter is it was our full intention to have him testify, in which case anything he said or anything we said to him would be fair game and anybody could discover whatever they wanted to.
Have you paid him any money?
Dr. Gonzalez? We gave him, he was retained with the letter. And the letter says, we are now retaining you as our consultant in the Zavala County North Plant cases. Paid him $1,000. Later, he sent us a bill for all this work he had done, $3,500. We sent him the $3,500. And in that letter, this is for your work as our consultant in the North Plant cases. And that's undisputed in this record.
But you say we... This isn't a question of whether or not the witness is disqualified. This is a question of whether or not one party's lawyers are disqualified. And that can only be if there was some conduct that they obtained an advantage. My employee who worked on this case is now their employee working on the case. We're going to presume there's a confidences that are being transferred and so disqualified the lawyer. You're basically, if I understand what you said, if we decide that Dr. Gonzalez can testify, then they can ask me questions they want to. Oh, but by the way, they can't be the lawyers asking the questions.
No, Your Honor, let me. They have 2 advantages. One, they just didn't take Dr. Gonzalez. They paid Dr. Gonzalez $10,000, gave him our documents, and said, all right, now you're our expert in the Starr County cases. You're now testifying. It doesn't have anything to do with treating people. Okay, that's number one. So we are already at a disadvantage. We've taken away our expert in the Zavala County cases. They've made him their expert. But
let me just interrupt a minute. The documents you're talking about are documents that Dr. Gonzalez has gotten from Wyatt?
From Mr. Harrison. They met. He gave him a stack of Wyatt documents, undisputed in the record.
But were those confidential documents? Or
no, they were documents that they discovered during the course of the lawsuit.
Okay.
But the point being, this isn't any testimony about the treatment of a plaintiff. This isn't any testimony about factual matters as they keep arguing accents and you're trying to hide it. This is, we're going to take your consultant, we're going to make him our witness, and the only difference is we paid him $10,000 and you didn't. Now that's the first. The second answer, Judge Eaney, to your question is, if they were truly on the up and up, both with Diana Palacios and with Dr. Gonzalez, they would have said, first of all, they would have had screening procedures for Diana Palacios and said, you can't work on Northland. But that's not why they hired her. They hired her to work on Northland. And what they did is they didn't go in and say, as an ethical lawyer should have, and said, don't tell me, you know, I'm going to hire you. Don't talk about Northland. I don't want to know anything about your conversations. I don't want you to do anything that might even hint at this. They did just the opposite. They went in to Dr. Gonzalez and Ms. Palacios and said, tell me, who are their other consultants? And set up meetings for me. And they did it. And that's undisputed. That's where they got the information from. And that's how they met him. And he makes a point of saying, well, they need to have, you know, that only applies to when they have the run of the office. Well, she did have the run of the office. She met with Mr. Herrera in our local counsel's office.
Any other questions?
Yes, I have
a question. They dispute the fact that Mr. Herrera consulted Mr. Gomez and asked him whether or not there were any confidences or there any problem in him hiring Dr. Gonzalez. Furthermore, did Gomez testify that there was, in court, under oath, that there were no confidences violated? And did Palacio testify to the same thing? Was that the edit before Judge Stanton?
No. It's close to that, but the nuances are important. What he testified to under oath was that she said, did she have access to our, meaning Wyatt's, confidential information? He said, no. That's conceded. But what they don't tell you is, There's actual testimony about whether he gave consent. They're ignoring that. They try to imply consent, which incidentally they argued in this case, with this court, for the first time. They didn't plead that in the trial. That wasn't raised there, neither was Ms. Paul, federal counsel. What they say is, did you ask consent? They asked Mr. Herrera, did you ask consent to hire him? No. I didn't need him. What they're trying to say is, they asked Jesse Gammon at the hearing, was she your employee? He said no, because she's not his employee. But Section 503 of the State Bar Disciplinary Rules, or the ethical rules, clearly make an attorney liable. Not liable, that's the wrong word, it's ethical rules. But responsible for, and it makes no distinction whether they're retained, and let me read this to you, employed, retained by, or associated. Employed, retained by, or associated. The State Bar of Texas has clearly said, we're not going to have a different rule, whether she's your employee or whether she's a contract employee or a contract lawyer. We've got the same rule, and that's the rule that ought to be enforced here. And I respectfully ask this court.
I have two questions. What is the evidence about the October 13th or 14th conversation between Jesse Gammas and Frank Herrera? And two, as a legal matter, does it matter whether the hiring law firm knows or doesn't know that Diana Flashes, for example, had worked with the other side for disqualification purposes? Does it matter if they know?
Well, it doesn't. The honest answer is it doesn't matter. In this case, they knew, so it was an intentional act. But it really doesn't matter whether they know or they don't know. And the facts about the conversation, I don't think, are as stated by Mr. Hunt in the record, but they're very similar to what I just told Judge Gonzalez, and that is there was never any permission for them to hire. And it was clear that it was told that she worked on the North Plant case.
Was permission necessary? What, under what law, you know, under what are you hanging your hat on that permission was necessary to hire somebody that doesn't have any, that's not going to share any confidential information?
Well, first of all, the disciplinary rules say that. Section 402 says that. Section 402 says you can't hire someone like that or even talk to them unless you have consent. So the difference is this is an issue they raised. It's more or less an affirmative defense on their part, and they raised it for the first time in this court. It says, hey, well, we talked to him, and he said she wasn't his employee. Well, that's not consent. In fact, when you read the brief we filed Friday, we highlighted for the first time, because they raised it for the first time, what the testimony was on consent. And Diana Palacio said, I never asked consent for Wyeth. Jesse Gomez said, I never gave consent. And Mr. Herrera said, I never asked for consent.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. I conclude the argument in the third call. The court will take another recess.
All right.